I had a topic that I thought would make a very good book, but since I'm not the type of person who can easily write, it takes me a long time to write properly, and sitting down like this and typing in front of a computer all day, it's just not my nature. I'm an active person. So I thought that, well, at least I could talk about it today, because this process that, well, I guess I've been going through and everybody goes through at one point or another, or many times in a year or even a month, is something significant in our lives. Now, the question that I'm going to discuss today is a very interesting question. It's, what makes us spiritually hungry? I remember when Gordon, the one who channels Amel, came to St. Petersburg, and he told me that I should name my book that I was not writing, Recipes for the Spiritually Hungry. Recipes, you know, like when you cook. Yeah. Now, this idea of spiritual hunger is an important concept, because you have to be hungry for something to enjoy that. And hunger usually refers to things like the hunger for food. When we speak about hunger, we say, I'm hungry. We refer to some food. Now, I know that we can be hungry for knowledge. We can thirst for knowledge. But these ways of speaking about it have been derived from the original, or shall we say, the fundamental principle of needing food for the body or water for the body. So to hunger and thirst for physical nourishment is natural for every single living being, more or less, because everybody's form of physical nourishment is different, because every body is different. Now, the ideas of spiritual hunger, this is a very significant idea, because just like it's even stated somewhere, somebody wrote this in some book, but if you don't have a hunger, eating food is not a very pleasurable thing. In fact, it becomes rather unpleasant. If you are not at all hungry, and you are even full, the idea of giving you more food makes you sick. It's like when you're totally full and somebody's trying to stuff more food in your mouth. It's no longer a pleasurable event. It's like a torture. It's like a torture that somebody would do who's a little sick in the head. So this idea of hunger is related to almost every single pleasurable event. It is very hard to enjoy something without a desire for it. Let's say you don't like to drink alcohol, and somebody insists that you do so. It's a very unpleasant event. If you don't like to go out in the mountains and climb in the snow, to be forced to do so is a very unpleasant event. Yet on the other hand, if it's very, very hot out and you have an opportunity to jump in a nice pool of water to be refreshed, that's a very pleasant event. That's a very pleasant thing, because you're too hot. you want to get cool. Or the most obvious example, if you're hungry, you want to eat. And what's really interesting, I think, is that, you know, people who are so hungry, no matter what the food is, it tastes good. If it's anything reasonable, and you're really hungry, that food tastes good to you. Because the hunger just feeds that taste bud, just says, eat, eat, it's good. If you're not so hungry, and you're not full, if the food tastes really good, even if you don't really want to eat, as soon as you taste the food, your senses say, ooh, that's good, I want more. So in this example, the taste, the good taste, feeds the desire to eat. So in the more generic sense, a hunger for something is a desire for something. Now, the idea of being spiritually hungry is intriguing. And to come up with recipes for the spiritually hungry implies to come up with some preparations, some cooked preparations that a spiritually hungry person would want to have. Now, that's all fine. That's all fine because we understand this. This is rather simple, not very difficult to understand. What I want to talk about today is what makes us spiritually hungry. Because this is a really important concept. Now, for those of us who don't feel spiritually hungry, we might be curious, why not? Or we may feel it has no relevance whatsoever. We might feel that there's no importance to it. Now, it's interesting how a person could feel that spirituality has no relevance. Let's examine that person. Most likely, things are going well. Or they're moving forward. That person may feel they're either well taken care of, or they are arranging things in their lives so that things will develop well. So they feel there's a progression in their life, and they feel that they are doing okay. Those around them are okay. There's no real crisis in their lives. Such a person may not be spiritually hungry. Now, at the same time, such a person may be spiritual. They may go to the church, or they may go to the temple, or they may go to wherever. And they may offer thanks to God so that things will continue to be good for them. They appreciate what God has done for them. And they offer back in thanks. And they just all around are quite happy with the way this reciprocation between them and the divine is going on. Naturally, such people are more or less in the mode of goodness, because this feeling of happiness and satisfaction with the way things are going on, it's giving them a support in their lives. You may also find another person who, even though things are not going so well, at least accepts everything as the mercy of God, or even as that which they deserve in their lives, and they can just accept the situation without anxiety, and for them everything is okay. These different classes that I just kind of talked about are not suffering in any way. They're not stressed in some fashion. They just accept their situation either be it a very good situation or a situation which is not so good, and they are quite okay with it. So they wouldn't necessarily fall into the category of being spiritually hungry. They're just spiritualists. But there are those who are actually hungry. Let's just for a second talk about who they might be. I would put as number one on the list, number one in, shall we say, the intensity of their hunger, are those who are in pain because of their physical body giving them pain, in pain because of their minds giving them pain. You can think of situations where somebody is trapped and is just has no human being to help, so is calling out to God, save me. Or a person who is in a very diseased situation and the medical community cannot help them, so they call out to God, please save me. Or a person is in such mental or emotional pain because of the loss of someone they love or the suffering condition of someone else, or maybe even an impossible situation that they themselves are in, or perhaps that they are in a situation where they feel so badly about themselves, perhaps something they've done or something they have not done. So they're feeling grave emotional or mental pain. This feeling of pain is a very powerful impetus to attempting relief, attempting to find relief. Now, there are, of course, other processes, other situations whereby somebody may move towards the Supreme. We know these from Bhagavad Gita, four kinds of personalities surrender to the Supreme. Those who are suffering, we just talked about. Those who are impoverished, that's this something similar to what we just spoke about. They need money. They're looking for some money. Those who are curious, we spoke about that, but not in the same way. I would say somebody who's curious is somebody who really needs to know why is it so, has a driving need. That's a thirst, a curiosity, that's a thirst to find out why. Of course, you could call that person searching for knowledge also. I would say the distinction between these two is blurred when the curious person is thirsting to find out why. Because a person searching for knowledge is also trying to find out why. After all, the knowledge means you answer questions. You answer questions which are important to you, or even of universal importance. So these two are not so much different. Of course, somebody could use the word curious, meaning they just say, well, what's this? I'm wondering, what's this temple or what's this? It's kind of interesting to talk about. But actually, that kind of curiosity is very surface, because you could just walk into a temple and or church and or whatever and say, okay, here this is. And when your curiosity is satisfied, you've looked around, you've had the guided tour. So you're no longer interested. You said, okay, that was nice. But if that curiosity leads you to ask more questions, then the process of asking questions is actually the process of gaining knowledge. I don't think anyone can actually understand in any way knowledge without asking questions. It seems to me this whole idea of simply learning knowledge by just listening and nothing else is insufficient, because Even if you think you are hearing exactly what that teacher is teaching, you may not be hearing what they are actually saying. You rather may be hearing what you think they are saying, or even more significantly, what you want to think they are saying. In other words, you see things through the filter of your own perception, of your own desires. So the only way to determine if what you think you understand is actually what is to be understood is to question, have I understood this right? Is it really so? Or if it is really so, then how can this be? Or how do we deal with that? These processes of question are very important, especially when you become more advanced in a particular science. There were things that you just took as axiomatic truths, which all of a sudden you start to question. Is it really so? And usually the process of such questioning comes on the back of an event, or connected with events that do not fit into the pattern of that accepted knowledge. We find this all the time in health issues, or in issues which people are very convinced it's so, but then there's all of these proofs or data that accumulates that says it's not always so. And when it gets to a certain level of data, people start to question. We see this in politics all the time. In the beginning, everybody may say, yes, it is so, because it has been stated to be so. I read it on the newspaper, I saw it on TV or on the internet, and everybody says it's so, it must be so. But then after a while, events that nobody can deny, if you're lucky enough to hear about them, causes you to question it. Is it really so? Is it actually the way it has been presented? So that is where that curiosity, that knowledge, is always essential for us, so that we never become complacent and think it's all clear, because it's not all clear. It's only giving us a clarification of the present situation, but only when we're aware of that present situation. Now, how do we know when there's something wrong? How do we know when all these things we have accepted, all these situations we have accepted, that we have concluded, even questioned, how do we know when something's wrong? Well, I would like to suggest that this often denigrated, you know, this one thing that we often put down as not very significant, suffering. This one thing, we put it down. It is responsible for a lot of advancement. It's interesting because people who read Bhagavad Gita, read this verse, may get the idea that, well, the person looking for knowledge, that's the best person. Krishna said it too. But somebody may think, oh, you have suffering, or you're in pain, or you just need something. This is not very advanced. Well, let's examine that. I have seen in my data collection, I'm collecting data in my life. We all collect data. There are events that take place. There are situations that we see. These create images which imprint themselves on our memory. These have impact on us. Okay, so we see this. And we see that even amongst people who so-called are knowledgeable, and we don't have to doubt whether they have knowledge or not. or whether or not they are seeking for knowledge. Because we can just accept that, just even for the sake of argument, and also we can accept that in our observation. These people are pious, they want good, they do search for knowledge. Why sometimes do we have these events, or sometimes these images come to us, which show something contrary to the standard principle of knowledge? What could that possibly mean? Now, I would like to propose that pain is necessary, especially in the modern world. It's required. Of course, you can't also avoid it, so that it's a moot point to say that, well, I can do without it. That's not really an argument or an issue, because you're going to have pain anyway. Pain is a necessary ingredient of life. In fact, you would not want to not have pain. You understand? You must have pain. It's an essential element of life. If you were not capable of feeling pain, you would not know when you are cutting yourself. You would not know when you are burning yourself. You would not know when basic bodily functions are not working properly. It would be a very serious condition. You would have to be locked up somewhere safely so you wouldn't do something terrible to yourself. So we can immediately understand, just from this holistic example, that pain is very much part of nature. It is a signal. It is an indicator. It is a part of our process of awareness that is integral to being alive. Without it, life loses a lot of its existence, because if you don't feel pain, you don't feel pleasure. It's the same function of physical awareness. Not feeling pain in the body would mean there's something wrong there with the nerves. You would also not be able to feel the pleasure in the body. Anyway, that's a very extreme case. But we're just talking about this theoretically. Now, let's talk about pain as a significator. Significator, it's something so relevant. It points to a specific direction. It points to a specific place. It points us. It focuses our awareness. It says, look here. Something needs to be done. Just like when a body feels pain, the pain is usually, not always, but usually in the area where we should focus our attention. The pain is saying something's not right. Fix it. You always have this like connection between, it's not right, fix it. I have this pain. It needs to be fixed. So that's significant. That is significant because without it, we would have no possibility to correct what could be wrong. And we would perhaps end up in situations which would be exceedingly dangerous for ourselves. Now, This is the first step, the very, shall we call, basis of the relevance of pain. It is just the function of pain to call out and say, look here. But that the real significance of pain starts at that point. In other words, what do we do next? Well, one has to then engage in a process. Pain starts a process. Like, for example, I have a physical pain. It starts a process of, number one, analyzing What is the cause of the pain? Now, to figure that out is a process. When it has to do with my physical body, it's easier to deal with. Because, like, for example, okay, I've got a sharp thing sticking in my arm. I have eyes. I can look at it. It's a physical thing. I have hands. I can take it away. Sometimes pain we feel is inside our body. We may not have the possibility to look at it. A doctor may not have the possibility to look at it. The pain we have may be a mental pain, an anguish, or an intense emotional pain. You can't look at it with the eyes. You can't smell it or taste it or touch it or hear it. Well, and you can hear it, of course, if I express it. I have this horrifying pain. Now, to deal with these kinds of pains, or even the physical ones too, but it makes more sense when we deal with the non-physical ones, you need to first of all understand that you need a process to figure it out. Otherwise, you just simply go around saying, "Oh, I feel bad. Oh, why is this? Oh, woe is me." And then you go tell everybody, and everybody says, "Oh, too bad." But this is not helping. Of course, if you are an addict to get sympathy from others, if that's your particular addiction, then you can go around all day and say, "I've got this pain." And other people say, "Oh, poor you." And then you go, "Ah, yes, poor me." But I'm not talking about that. Let's put that aside right now. Let's talk about a person who really has a pain because they've got a pain and is not just looking for sympathy. They really need to figure out what to do. So the first thing is to figure out that you actually need a process. Now, as obvious as that sounds, it's not always obvious to everybody. I know it's obvious, okay, but some people just haven't gotten themselves educated enough to even understand there is something you can do. That's why when people are in enormous pain and they don't have yet the understanding they've got to find the process, when they meet people like us or others who are offering their services to people, they understand, "Oh, you mean there's something I can do about this? There's actually something I can do to help me with this pain. Oh, that's fabulous." So in that case, publicly offering service has value for that class of people who have not yet understood that there is a process by which you can actually figure it out. So the next thing to do when you know that you have to find a process is to actually find it. Now, finding a process is a tricky, tricky thing. Because as far as I've seen, everybody who's engaged in a particular process, and I mean here perhaps a psychological process or a spiritual process or some kind of process that may not fit into a category, usually those people who are already doing it are very confident about what they are doing. Okay, there is a small percentage or maybe even a medium percentage of people within that who are open-minded enough to understand that I'm doing this now, I may not always do it, maybe there's something better, I just haven't found it yet. But for right now, I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm confident with what I'm doing, so I'll continue to do that. But generally people, even in that class, feel that what they are doing is the best thing. That is up to the point they decide it's not, but that may take months or years or lifetimes, I don't know. But mostly everybody's very confident that what they are doing is the best thing for them to do. Otherwise, if they actually felt there was something better, they would generally do it. Of course, the problem would be is if they were doing something and they did think something was better, was to have the courage to change. And that's another part of a process. That I'll speak about in a second. The next thing to deal with is you got to do the process. Now, I find this as a very interesting thing. I know I use the word interesting, and I find this very interesting. I use this phrase a lot, and I know that's quite a boring phrase. I'm sorry, forgive me. It's just that I'm one of these curious researchers. I like to research themes and anything that's related to this uncovering and discovering and expanding and evolving. So when I hit upon something which is very interesting, I say it, I find this very interesting. But doing a process, oh, this is a really good one. Because there's usually a lot to do. You've got to learn a lot because a process is not a process unless there is a procedure, or unless there is step-by-step finding your way to some kind of a goal. After all, when you find a process, you are usually heading towards a goal. Okay, now let me clarify that. You can say, I'm in a process, but I haven't yet defined it. I'm looking for something, but I'm not sure what it is. I'm seeking out something, but I'm not confident. I'm moving towards something, but I'm not clear. That is no different a process than the other structured processes I was talking about. But in this unclear process, we are usually on our own or together with others who are also not structured. But we have influences which structure our search. We read things and we hear things, and nature calls to us to move in certain directions. The universe pushes us. This is actually a very natural form of growth. I suppose it's kind of like a tree in the forest finding its way through to the sun, or finding its place in the earth amongst all the other trees to put its roots and fit within the matrix of the forest. So this is as much a process as the trees that grow in a tree farm, for instance, where all trees are placed exactly separate so they have enough space and they have enough earth. But I want to talk about somebody who perhaps accepts even a more structured process too. Because even though they are the same, the mentality is different. And there is that part that we just talked about, the capacity to adapt, the capacity to transform, that is easier for one who's finding their way than it is for one who thinks the way is clearly defined for them. And I think it is at that spot, that point in the process or the evolution, that being stuck can kill you. But besides for that, engaging in a structured process can have valuable results. For example, you have felt a pain. You have figured out you need to find something to do about it. You have actually researched, or perhaps by the grace of God, found something to do about it. And now you're doing it step by step. You know, this is a very generic thing. You could use this as a medical example, as an economic example, as a political example. Even how you manage your family. Any particular process. That's why I'm using the word process. It's a way to find your way through. It's a way to get to the goal you want to reach. Now, when you're in a structured process, there are certain interesting things to talk about it. You know it very well. There's a goal given to you, be it Vaikuntha or heaven or wherever. There's a way to get to that goal. I said there's a goal given to you, be it Vaikuntha or heaven, or there's a way to get to the goal, things you should do, things you should not do. There's knowledge given to you about why it is the way it is. There are things that'll happen to you if you don't do it that way and you do it in another way. There are things that you are expected to do and ways you are expected to act. This is there in every process. Any structured process will have this because that's the nature of a structured process. The difficulties of that come when you get to this most important step. When you see that pain is there and you're not allowed to adapt or transform to deal with the pain, the very thing which puts you into the process, the very force which is fundamental to the human spirit's evolution is taken away from you. And that is very serious because it puts you in a situation where you're not allowed to reflect upon your pain or to make transformations or to make adjustments to deal with your pain. In some cases, people just stop feeling because it's easier than feeling pain. In some situations, people want to do the exit strategy where they want to just simply die because it's better than feeling the pain. It's better than feeling, you know, and don't forget, pain has got this big broad umbrella. It could be also just this feeling of inadequacy, not being good enough, feeling that you have disappointed others, disappointed yourself. You're not good enough, fallen, sinful, whatever. So dealing with that kind of a pain but not being able to use all of the tools that pain usually comes with is the cause of getting stuck. And when you get stuck, it usually ends up very badly. One way or another. You can rot slowly. You can rot rapidly. You can have psychological problems. You can cause yourself disease. Anyway, you know the whole thing. So this adaptation, the capacity to adapt and transform, to change your course when needed, is an essential fundamental right of every spirit. To have that right means to be a healthy individual. Because if you're not allowed to adapt to pain by making adjustments to the, according to the signals the pain is giving you, something's wrong, do something about it. place your attention here. Do something about it. I remember when I was in my, shall we say, final year or a few years in ISKCON. I had one gnawing pain that was so tremendous for me that I had a very hard time dealing with it. It wasn't a physical pain. It wasn't a hunger that needed satisfying. It was ultimately this pain of the pain of children. This pain of what about the pain these kids are feeling? What about the pain these families are feeling? What about the pain these ladies are feeling? This pain that cannot be dealt with because the adjustments required to deal with this pain are beyond the scope of the process. Chanting more didn't help anyone. Following programs better didn't help anyone. Surrendering more didn't help. I know that sounds all blasphemous, but I have practical experience having children in front of me who are grown up and interacting with them. They had to deal with their pain in another way, to make adjustments according to what they were physically, what they were. And the whole structure had to change. So my pain was to see this very stiff structure and to rebuild it in such a way that everybody would find a place. And so long as there was money, okay, that was possible because you could buy anybody with money. I'm sorry to say that, but even great leaders who usually are very troublesome to deal with could be manipulated by money, because money talks, nobody walks. So the idea of transforming everything so that everybody would find a place was very appealing to me, because finally I was seeing there's a way to resolve this deep pain in my heart, to transform it so that the kids would fit, the mothers would fit, there would be families. Coming from an Italian family, family is the most important thing. And to see that family being torn apart on behalf of some process, I didn't like it. So to bring family again and to give place to this was a way to relieve the pain for me. I was in a process. And in that process, I was feeling very happy that things were going in the right direction. It was actually going to work. It would take me about maybe 5 years, I figured. I had a 5-year plan for it. How to gradually, step by step, integrate people into a society. And then, as you all know, money disappeared because the way it works in the world. And what was fascinating to me now, or what is fascinating to me now when I examine it, was that when my process hit a wall, it could not continue. My process couldn't continue. My way of dealing with my pain could not continue. I ran up against a wall that, when I was looking at it, caused me to just crumble, because everything was stopped. I was not even aware of this particular alternate process which was going on in me. I was not aware of it until one day everything stopped and broke down. And when I restarted again, there was one intense thought in my mind. If I don't have the right to adapt and transform my situation, I will never be able to complete my process. Because it was as much my process as it was a social process. As I saw what was around me, I transformed as part of this group transformation. But when I ended up being in a situation where there were no facilities to transform, I had already transformed. So there was no turning back. There was no way to turn back. I had to move forward. And the only way to move forward at that point was to transform the way I am, the way I deal. Now, it didn't hit me for some time how to do that or what to do, but the idea of that this had to be done was just ringing in my head. I've got to do this. I will not make the same mistake. I will not be stuck in the same way, because it took me maybe 4 weeks after that to get to the bottom of it all, is that the very nature of structures, the very nature of a process which fixes you in a particular way, is that you have to buy into it, and to move out of it is to reject it entirely. The value structure did not work. The idea of people did not work. And so I dealt with it by leaving it, getting out of it. I had to make that adjustment, because it was the only way I could continue the process, maybe not with these people, but with me as a person, continuing the process that I started in me by dealing with the pain of others. And when I concluded this process didn't deal with that pain, I said, I will now do some other process. So I ended up in that other category of person who's just finding his way through the forest of process, finding his roots in the forest of trees, finding the sky as growing upwards. And I realized that one has to have this freedom. And in fact, this freedom is our right, because the spirit is free by nature. The spirit only becomes bound when the spirit wishes to be bound. Now just think about that. All of a sudden, a key appears. The spirit is bound so long as the spirit wishes to be bound. A fundamental axiomatic truth. Again, I'm here, wherever that here may be, because I want to be. And when I don't want to be, I don't need to be. So long as I hunger for here, wherever that may be, I shall be here. And when I no longer hunger, I'll do something else. Why is it we don't find the spiritual world around us right now? Why is it we don't find ourselves connected with God right now? Well, because we don't want to. We don't hunger for it. But even if you hunger, you need to have a recipe to fulfill that hunger. To follow the recipe, you follow a process. To follow the process, you have to do the process and adapt. It's a continuous thing, continually in life, always going on. So therefore, it's essential never to be stuck. Because as soon as you get stuck, you can't continue the process. You can't continue in this particular way. You have to stay stuck. Because within these fixed processes, you can deal with a lot. as long as it's only you, because ultimately, yesterday a person came over to the house and told me about some devotee who's dying in Mayapur. So this person told me that, you know, here I was lamenting about this person who's going to die in a week. And then I'm thinking, why should I lament for him? He's lucky. He's going to get out of this terrible place. I have to stay here. I'm the unlucky one. Whoa, that hit me heavily. The only escape for this person's life is to die. So I'm looking at this and thinking, the only way this poor person has to deal with the pain is to die. But even worse, you've got to die in a holy place. Now, what a situation. Now, I think, and therefore I am, but besides that, I think that it's essential for us to understand how much power we have to adapt, how much power we have to transform, and that we should be thankful for the pain. Not that it makes us think the only hope is to get out of this place and forever die or whatever, forever live by dying, sorry. But by constantly adapting so that we get to that point, and I mean really get to that point, where we can reach out to Radha and Krishna and just embrace them right here and right now. Where we can transform this right here and right now into that place by our consciousness. Now, of course, you'll say, oh, that's very difficult, blah, blah. It's when you want to do it, you do it. Now, how do you want to do it? By wanting to do it. It's a question of adapting, transforming. Let the pain throw you there. It doesn't matter. Let the poverty throw you there. It doesn't matter. Let the curiosity throw you there. Let the knowledge throw you there. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is that gets you there, let it do so. Follow it. Work with it. Work with the events around you. Don't just reject them. Don't just push them away. Work with them. Because these things are the impetus for attainment. You know, I mean, I hate to use this example in one sense, but have you ever wondered about this love and separation stuff? I used to read about these pitiful statements of Srimati Radharani and all the gopis crying and all this. And I used to think, you know, what's the use of all this ecstasy if all the time it's causing you so much pain? Now, I know this is not the way you're supposed to think, and I understand that all the great Vaishnavas out there are just shaking their head in pity. Oh, this Hari, he's so gone, he doesn't understand a thing. This is the real ecstasy. Maybe for a person who's acting that pain. Maybe for a person who's just crying out as a great act because this is what you're supposed to do when you are in ecstasy. But for one who's actually feeling that pain, it wrenches your heart out. It's not an act. It's not all of a sudden you can just turn it off and have a samosa. It's a really intense thing. Okay. But looked at it another way, one can wonder, why is it so? Why is it so? Now, I see it as very, shall we say, I know it's connected, but it's more than connected. It's like the essence of life, that this pain is an impetus. You know, spiritual things are very intense, very, very intense. Sometimes people call me very intense. I mean, I know what intensity is. For me, intensity is what I drink for breakfast. It's either it's boring or it's intense. Because I'm a very intense person, it's got to be an intense experience. I can't stand these little, you know, experiences. It's got to have intensity. Because, you know, when there's like this enormous pain, and all of a sudden there's like this relief, it's such an intensity. Or all of a sudden there's this great pleasure, it's such an intensity. Or you've lost somebody and all of a sudden you find them, it's such an intensity. It's this intensity that makes life really incredible. This intensity. And in the spiritual world, you would imagine there's a lot of intensity. Because after all, if all you do all day is walk around and make flower garlands and prepare sandesh, and okay, I know it's nice. I'm not trying to be blasphemous here or degrade the beauty of it, not at all. But what I am saying is that there's also incredible intensity. And this intensity, even if it's in word games, the word games where gopis and gopas and Krishna and Radha are talking, and there's this Chandravali and Radha and their groups and the way they talk to each other and the way they make plots against each other and the way all of a sudden there's this intense separation and there's this like, this is all part of the intensification of the experience. And that pain of loss or that pain of separation, it's an impetus to just increase love enormously in the intensity of the reunion. So one should never make the mistake of minimizing that pain into a spiritual ecstasy. It is pain. It hurts. The point of pain is to hurt. And the hurt says something's wrong. Do something about it. That is a principle in the spiritual world. And it's a principle right here. And it's a principle always. And were you to be prohibited from finding your way to deal with that pain, you would be prohibited from expressing one of the most essential elements of the spirit. Now, I know people might defend themselves and say, well, all of these processes work, you're just not doing them long enough, or you're just not doing them right enough, or you're just not good enough, or you're still sinful, or you still have desires, or unwanted things, or whatever. Okay, if you believe that, fine. Everything depends on your belief. What you believe is what you will do. I thought I'd just bring up an alternative understanding because I feel it's relevant in my life. I feel it's relevant in the lives of many people. And, oh, here I am. I was just about to say it's interesting. But significantly, in the last 2 weeks, for some reason, maybe 3 weeks, I have been getting a lot of letters from a lot of people who I haven't seen or heard from in a long time, who are telling me about the pain they went through, telling me about the process they went through, telling me about the successes they are having in by moving themselves from this structured process to the process which finds its roots and finds its way to the sky. And it's interesting because just before this, I was having a lot of doubt. A lot of doubt in the sense of, do I have any relevance in this world? Do I have any value in this world? Is anybody getting anything from what I'm talking about? Does it really matter? After all, I've blabbed enough. There's a lot of recordings. You can hear, read, you know, whatever. Does it matter? And the universe responded to that question with a lot of answers. Yeah, it matters. Okay, so we continue. And I hope that this discussion today has, to some extent, assisted others. I hope more than less, but of course, whatever. I hope that we've understood enough about pain to respect it and never push it away, wherever it may appear. To always find out when there's a discomfort. Why? To always seek out. Why? Because by doing so, you'll find yourself in places you can't imagine you could ever go.